Log Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Neil with the tornado, Jenny Senegal.
News to cover. Tom's going to be joining us late. We also have tremendous Travis Sims coming on at 8:30. And he's got a pretty impressive record. I got 27 wins, only one loss, and 20 knockouts to his credit. From Norwalk, Connecticut. He's a southpaw. Fought mostly at middleweight. And he's got some pretty impressive fights on his resume. Well, the talk radio lady sounds better. How about you, Tony?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't sound like it was. Didn't sound like you were in slow motion.
What?
Didn't sound like you were in slow motion.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have, like I said, Travis Sims is going to be on tonight. He's 27-1 with 20 knockouts. Only lost to Joaquim Alcine, who was 28-0 at the time. And that was for the WBA World Light Middleweight title that he won against Jose, actually defended it against Jose Antonio Rivera. It looks like he won it against Bronco McCart.
I remember that fight.
That's back in the day after my birthday, on October 2nd, 2004. Won that fight. But I think he's in the promotional game again, or joined the promotional game like some of the other boxers in the business, namely, I guess, the golden boy there, Oscar De La Hoya, started to kind of trend there with that. And we had Mike Tyson just get in, and next week we're going to have Johnny Ruiz on the show, who just himself got into the promotional game. So we'll talk about that with him. And could be a big week for us next week, Tony, because we're also working on getting Shannon Briggs on the show.
Wow. So. And Shannon was the last man to fight George Foreman.
Yeah. So it's going to be a heavyweight week. We'll see.
Well, him and the Relief didn't fought each other, did they? I don't think they did.
The what?
Him and the Relief never fought.
Right.
One of them makes sure they have two opponents on back to back.
Yeah. But we met Ruiz at the Rocky Marciano statue dedication already.
I didn't get a chance to really talk to him, though. I saw that he was there, and I got a picture of him from my seat in the bleachers when they introduced him. But I never had a chance to see him and see him up close and talk to him.
I don't know. I went right up to him and shook his hand. I thought you were there for that.
No.
Well, maybe you were over talking still with Vinny Paz, but I know I went over, shook his hand, and said a couple things to him.
I wish I would have bringing
my Mike Tyson glove for him to sign.
I wish I would have asked Vinny on the spot that day. And it's funny now, because I had heard a little rumbling about it, and I did see a few things, and I got a DVD a couple of years ago. But I'm finally reading Vinny's book, the one he signed for my dad back a couple of years ago. And there's some very unflattering things to say in there about the Dubas. And it was funny because when Vinny was signing autographs, at first, I got the new Duba, and I got a picture. And, obviously Lou's 90 years old now. And then I went up to Vinny and, you know, said hi to Vinny, talked to him a little bit, took his picture with my dad. And, I said, I was just sitting over there with Lou Duba. And Vinny's like, oh, yeah, Lou, you know, he really didn't say anything. What he said, there was very unflattering remarks about Lou and the old Duba family and Vinny's brother.
Uh-oh. Wow. That was a great show down there and great event. But actually, I met Johnny Ruiz before that at another Rocky Marciano event. Or actually, it wasn't a specific Rocky Marciano event, but he was attending a fight in Boston. And we had Dennis Maurice and I were working the Rocky Marciano booth there. They had a sales booth in the corner of the venue. And Johnny Ruiz came over and took a picture behind the booth in front of the big poster. And I'll probably use that for the show next week. But anyway.
The interesting thing about John is the fact that his whole career John went back. And he was about fighting style and all this and that. And I can see where they're coming from. You know, he could sometimes be very difficult to watch. And the shame of it is that, you know, he was just such a really, really nice guy. So I never really got the chance to meet him, but from all accounts I've heard, he's such a nice guy, very quiet, putting his nickname, a very quiet man. And another thing that really, I think, hurt him in a negative fashion was the outrageousness of his, you know, manager-trainer, Norman Stone, who's, you know, Norman always a lot of times bring attention on himself. And in a way, similar to another Hispanic fighter, apparently, that being Danny Garcia and his father, Angel. But at the same time, you know, Angel brings a lot of, you know, controversy. But Norman was, for the most part, very hard to like.
Right. Well, he's getting involved as a manager now. He just actually kind of pulled the same move as Mike Tyson, whereas he bought out a whole other promotion. But in this case, it was actually a promotion based in New England that was sort of in tatters. And apparently he paid off all the debts and squared everything up and is now going in a different direction with it. I think it used to be primarily an MMA organization, if I remember correctly, called AFO, American Fighting Organization. And it's definitely going to be both boxing and MMA this time around. So we'll have to talk more about that with him next week. But anyway, of course, there was a big UFC event last night. I want to get to at least going through the results of that. I didn't see any of it. I totally missed the start of 10 main cards in the UFC, because Wednesday night is Ultimate Fighter night, of course, now. The women's show going on, co-ed show now. So I ended up watching the Ultimate Fighter rather than the UFC card entirely. And anyway, I'll just go through the results here. We had Alan Patrick beat Derek Whiteley in round one by TKO. Chris Carriasso defeated Eliardo Santos in round two, also by TKO. Welterweights Jan Cabral and David Mitchell went to a unanimous decision, won by Cabral there. Igor Araujo beat Ildemar Alcantara after three rounds, also by unanimous decision there. And we had Fight of the Night, Rafael Azenkeo defeated T.J. Dillashaw. That was a split decision. We had a controversial fight here between Rusamar Palhares and Mike Pierce that ended in 31 seconds, and apparently Palhares held on to a heel hook after Pierce had tapped multiple times, and the referee told him to stop, and so actually he ended up being the only one on the whole card, Palhares, for this submission. And they took the bonus away from him for submission of the night because of his actions there. So he lost out on $50,000 for holding onto a heel hook a little too long. But I guess he'd done that before, so it's not his first offense. I guess it's apparently justified in that regard. Anyway, we also had light heavyweights, a couple fights. Fabio Maldonado beat Joey Beltran after three rounds. It was another split decision. And we had Thiago Silva defeated Matt Hamill by unanimous decision. Hamill just recently returned from his retirement. So maybe he's thinking about going back. I don't know. Then finally we had a knockout of the night. Actually two more fights to talk about, but this knockout of the night was Dong Hyun Kim beat Eric Silva. And from what I read anyway, Kim was on the verge of being knocked out himself and just turned around and floored Silva. I guess they don't call him the stun gun for nothing. And the main event was Jake Shields beating Demian Maia by a split decision after five rounds there. And apparently Demian Maia was a little bit upset about how the judges scored that one. Only one of them had it for him. So he was not too pleased about that. Well, we got plenty of boxing to talk about here. Tom's going to be around 9:15.
And I will talk more about it when we get Tom on the air, because I want to get, you know, his feedback on it. But he's like coming up this weekend, that being the Marquez-Bradley fight. So when I'll talk more about the fights of last weekend and, you know, what I got to see. I didn't get to see a whole lot, but I did get to see some. Well, the Bradley Marquez fight this weekend, I wanted to be able to write a preview article on it, but I do get stuck working late every night this week. We're having a big competition at work where the winning team gets a three-day off, and my team kind of wants to win that. So we were tasked in turning to our section of the office into a big inner office hot air balloon. Yeah. And I was team captain, so I kind of volunteered to stay late a few nights to get that done. But last week we had a few fights. I got to see the afternoon fight live. The later fights I followed more on there, and so I didn't get to see him live. I was out with some friends. But the afternoon fight was not a fight that would make too many boxing fans. That was Vladimir Klitschko and Alexander Povetkin. Now, I didn't expect Povetkin to win the fight. Not at all. But I expected more out of Klitschko. I really did. And I know sometimes he gets cautious because of his stamina and because of his chin. But, you know, he had the man down four times. But especially as the fight wore on, it was jab, jab, like maybe throw a hook in there, throw 1-2, and as soon as you throw the right hand, and Povetkin would come to kind of duck under it, Klitschko would just kind of lean on top of him and lean off 240-some pounds. tournament, which is a great strategy for wearing the guy's legs out, but not a very exciting strategy. It looks more like, you know, an octopus in there. And, you know, not something, you know, you want to say to a fight fan and say, hey, this is the reason you want to watch boxing. Let me go and look at the other card that was on Saturday night that I did not get to see live. Let's just hold on for me for 1 second.
Also, while you're doing that, I might as well tell you we got confirmation of Android as well for our October 24th show. So, yeah, October's tournament's awesome out there.
What confirmation did you get on that?
October 24th on Demetrius Andre.
Okay. We'll look at last Saturday, but then I also have a few other things that we'll look at. I'm getting some emails, some upcoming stuff in my neck of the woods. See if any of them are near that. Oh, yeah. And I'm sorry I didn't get to see this one fight live, and now it's
probably the
moment.
Go ahead.
Okay. In the one fight, not impressive performance, Terrence Crawford, young, up-and-coming, good prospect, undefeated, 22-0, 16 knockouts. Just a rather boring decision over Andre Klimov. And it was, you know, looked to be a pretty good test. You know, he was also undefeated. And he had some good names on his record. And it just ended up not being a good fight. And Crawford won every round on that card. In the main event was a very impressive performance by former champion Miguel Cotto, who's on the comeback trail. And Miguel really took it to Delvin Rodriguez. Now, a lot of people were expecting Cotto to win. You know, he's got Freddie Roach in his corner now. He's coming off the two losses. And Rodriguez, tough fighter, but he knew it was not in Cotto's league. And the fact that he likes to brawl was going to be, you know, undoing. But Cotto looked good. He just went in there and absolutely destroyed him. Third round TKO. Some people were complaining the stoppage was a little bit premature, but not at all. You know, the man was definitely beaten, and there was, you know, time to call that fight. Also, I see a another fighter on the card, a very good, you know, very good young fighter. Never got the breaks in his career, and it looks like his time to make some noise may be over now. That was a Philadelphia kid, Jamal Davis. Never got a lot of breaks, and this time, it said may be the end of it. He just lost his third straight fight. This time, he was knocked out in two rounds. He's right now 14-11 with six knockouts. The other two fights that he lost recently, Patrick Mahuski, he was 20-1, Yuri Foreman, former world champion, 30-2. He lost both of them by decision. This fight, fighting down with another name, Jorge Melendez, 26-3. He just got blown out of the water. And I think this might be the end of Jamal. And it's sad because what Jamal was doing with his career was really trying to, you know, raise awareness for breast cancer out there. And, you know, as his wife, you know, was a victim of breast cancer. And, you know, it's always, you know, so you see a good, tough kid like that, and, you know, he's, you know, coming to the end now. And I also see where he has two losses, I was looking at his record, two losses to fighters that are actually going to be going up against each other in an HBO World Title fight in a few weeks. Peter Krohn, who's the current champ of the world, lost unanimous decision to back in 2007. And then just over 2 years ago, he lost a 12-round TKO to Gabe Rosado, and they'll still be meeting on HBO in a couple of weeks, which is that's going to be a fight to watch. That's going to be a good fight. You know, if you're not going to be home that night, if you're going to a Halloween party, if you're, you know, going out, put your DVR on for that one. That's going to be one you're not going to want to miss.
Well, I mentioned Andre, too. He's going to fight coming up November 9th, fighting Vince Matarossian, 33-0, with one draw, 21 knockouts. under himself. So that one is for the vacant WBO junior middleweight champion.
Who was that you were first saying? I didn't hear the first name.
Demetrius Andre.
Okay, because he's going for his title now.
Right.
I knew they were moving him up. I knew they were moving him up the ladder. And he was really blowing everybody out of there. And they're saying, like, when are you going to feed this kid more competition? But every time they tried to, he just blew out of the water. And now he's getting his title shot. Okay, that's cool.
I guess he was originally slated to face a Russian guy, Bobek Baysangorov, last July, but the Russian pulled out of the fight with an injury and stripped of the belt. So now these two fighters here, Motorus and Andrei, will be fighting for that title. So we'll talk to him in a couple weeks about that one. As I said, Johnny Ruiz has been in the news this week for signing up with the American Fighting Organization. He's the two-time World Boxing Association heavyweight champion, and he's going to promote combat sports starting in January with the amateur MMA tournament in various weight classes to determine the best.
What I really want to talk to John about is just, you know, some of the big names that he's been in there fighting. I mean, he's fought, you know, a tremendous number of times. You know, from guys like Holyfield to a guy like James Tony, who was a slick final puncher, hard to fight, to like a 7-foot giant and got a U.S. You know, I don't know too many guys that have fought in a short period of time. Maybe he fought Roy Jones. Actually, I'm going to talk down. I'm mad at him. I got a lunch on that fight. I picked him to win that one, and he didn't win.
Wow. Hopefully he'll win with the promotional game. I think he's one of those people who's seen enough and experienced enough in boxing to do the right thing with that. So we'll talk about that with him next week. I got a Tyson story here, but it's not my Tyson. It's Tyson Fury. Announced his fight with former undisputed cruiserweight and former WBA World Heavyweight Champion David Haye is signed and sealed for February 8th. And,
that was supposed to happen until Haye got cut.
Yeah.
Did you hear the other thing from the Fury news?
No.
Great news. Apparently, he's trying to be more Lennox Lewis out of retirement.
automatically lose their Olympic eligibility. And this was sent to October 4th, 2013, from Gregory Serp. And he says, Mr. Butler, I write you in response to your letter regarding the signing of two Olympic prospects for the professional boxing promoter. Is it not the case now that so-called Olympic-caliber amateur boxers can indeed sign professional contracts while maintaining their Olympic eligibility? USA Boxing, which falls under the regulatory guidance of AIBA, has introduced a number of initiatives in recent months, including the World Series of Boxing, and perhaps its most ambitious project to date, AIBA Professional Boxing, APB, that will offer contracts to fighters, allowing them to box professionally in the APP while retaining Olympic eligibility. So my question is, why would the young boxers mentioned in your letter, Lubin and Galarza, who signed with Iron Mike Productions, not be eligible for the 2016 Olympic Games? The answer appears to be it is okay for so-called amateur boxers to sign professional contracts with APB or WSB and still be eligible for the Olympics, but if these same amateur boxers sign with Golden Boy, Iron Mike, Top Rank, or Main Events, they would automatically lose their Olympic eligibility. To me, this does not seem right. Not seem right is in all caps. So let's try to emphasize that point there. Anyway, for the rest of the letters, a couple paragraphs here. Almost all of the current Olympic sports allow professional athletes to compete. Boxing should be no different. If AIBA, which is recognized by the IOC as the governing body of amateur boxing, decides that it is now okay to have their amateur boxers sign pro contracts, then it should not matter who they sign. The same rules should apply to all. If AIBA wants to put some restrictions on these amateur boxers so as to retain their Olympic eligibility, such as limiting the number of pro bouts you can have, then that is okay. In this case, each promoter signing these young amateurs would be playing under the same set of rules. By allowing all promoters to sign these boxers, this would also allow these young boxers to shop their services so as to get the best deal. Once they have signed, then it would be up to the boxer and his promoter to decide if they would want to follow AIBA rules and remain eligible for the Olympic Games. Just my thoughts. And pretty interesting thoughts they are, I think.
WBA Super Welterweight Champion of the World,
Hey, Travis, this is Rabble Rouser and Rich Bergeron trying to get in touch with you for our interview tonight. I'm sure my number comes up a little screwy because I'm using a Skype phone, but if you see that number again, we'll try back in a few minutes. Just pick it up at Sus, and we'll go from there. And love the voicemail message there. It's pretty cool. Anyway, we'll talk in a few. So, I wonder if Michael Buffer licensed that. We'll have to call Bruce on that one.
That would be Michael Buffer, though, wouldn't it?
No, I know, but Bruce does all his business affairs.
I have to ask if
Bruce allowed that. I remember when we talked to him, he said we could only use the introduction he did for our show, for that one show.
Yeah, I know.
So we'll see.
I got an associate of mine. Kind of pisses me off sometimes. But he's a guy that, he got all in the UFC. Yeah, because it had literally two lessons, and he probably would have got beaten up by a 7-year-old. But he'd have all the tap outs all over his car and everything. So he would always tell me, oh, Michael Buffer, he's nothing. You know, Bruce Buffer is much better. And he's like, all fired up about it. I'm like, listen, I'm going to tell you something. I said, Michael Buffer's been around for 30-some years now. He's the one that paved the way. He's the one that has the greater level. Yeah, but Bruce is better. I said, why? Because he announces for that UFC that you like so much. I said, the roles reversed. And if he was the boxing announcer and Michael was the UFC announcer, now Michael would be the better brother. So don't give me your bullshit. I'm a very confrontational person, Rich, if you haven't just noticed that in the last 6 years.
Well, let's go on with the news here. We got... And I actually just saw it today. They're having a big 30 for 30 film series show called No Mas, premiering Tuesday, October 15th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And, of course, it's going to chronicle the rivalry of boxing legends Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran. Should be an interesting little segment there. I met Roberto Duran out in Vegas. And surprisingly, he doesn't speak a word of English, doesn't walk around with a translator either. It's like, he just looks at you like you're speaking another language, because to him, it is another language when you're talking.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very surprising, you know, for a guy that fought a lot in the U.S. and you know, got a lot of news coverage and everything in the United States, that he still has not learned to speak English fluently. Very surprising, but... it is what it is. I'm sure they did a good job on that show. I've seen a couple of those broadcasts. So we'll check that out. See what else we got.
Okay, talking about Roberto Duran, it's funny. You know, growing up is really good. You know, I mean, I was a big Sugar Ray fan. You know, I was too young to really realize when Duran beat him the first time. I was in the arena, and I didn't give my dad to look about it. But when Duran was getting older, you know, he still, you know, had the, he won his first world title in California. And I was really just a little kid when he, you know, he had the great fights, the trilogies, you know, and the rivalries and all that. But, you know, what it really reminded me was two instances late in his career. First was his first fight with Vinny Diaz. And there was a lot of animosity going into that fight. And unlike Vinny and guys like Greg Haugen and Dana Rosenblatt, him and Duran actually became really good friends. And it was the first time in 94, you know, he knocked Vinny down, Vinny got up, rallied to beat him. And their second fight, and Vinny even talked about it on our show the one time, you could see in a 6-month span, Duran got really old. You know, and he had a lot of fire in that first fight in June, and by January, he was spent. He had nothing left. Vinny beat him pretty easily, like I was on ESPN just a few months ago. And almost 3 years after that, they gave Roberto another world title fight with William Joffe at middleweight. And I remember watching that fight, and it actually made me sad. And I remember Joe Cortez refereeing it, and Jobby was just teeing off on him, and they stopped in the third round. And I just remember Joe Cortez, like, almost consoling him. And just the look on Duran's face, it was like, I was almost mad at William Jobby for beating up Duran like that, you know. Now, believe me, if it was a young Duran, he would have done the same thing to a guy in the same shoes, you know. He would have beat the guy up really bad. But it was just the look on Duran's face, you know, was almost humiliated. But then my other things, like, I remember Duran, like, I remember being a kid, you know, like how mean Duran always looked. They always looked so intense. And as he said, after the Jeff Lanica fight, lucky I wasn't in shape, or I would have put him in, he would have gone to the room, not the hospital. And then on Vinny Paz's last fight, Duran was in his corner, and he was about 100 pounds heavier. But he was smiling, and he was laughing. You're right, didn't speak a word English. But at the same time, he was just so... The word I would describe would be jovial. And every time I think of Roberto, I always think of that. You know, from really bitter rivals to really good friends. And I remember Vinny saying, Roberto inviting down to his 50th birthday party and how they ended up really forging a very close bond.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely, very.
Well, let's try Travis one more time here. All right, well, I guess it'll give me a few more minutes to get the message. I don't know what the story is. You know, it's time and everything. So I'm going to send him an email, too. I think his email goes right to his phone. So maybe I'll take him a text.
Yeah, since I'm going to dive more into the Bradley Marquez fight after Tom gets on the air. Because I want to get his feedback on it, like I said, I didn't get a chance to write a preview on it. And, you know, a lot of times I always tell you guys, when I read one of these articles, sometimes I'll get different scenarios that pop into my head. And sometimes I really have a hard time, you know, picking out which one I think is going to happen. Like, I can see a scenario in this fight where, you know, Bradley is the more damaged fighter. He got really beat up by Manny Pacquiao, despite what the judges said. And I was watching part of the All Access where he was saying, no, man, 8-4, I beat him 8-4. No, you didn't. You lost 11-1. And that one was charity. Manny gave you the round. But then you have Marquez. And what really has me teetering on this fight is Marquez was getting beat up by Pacquiao on the last fight. I mean, he knocked him down with that sloppy right hand that never should have landed. That was the one that I think was the third or fourth round. But then Pacquiao was really taking it to him. And then, he got sloppy, walked into a beautiful counter right hand. Now, I'm seeing two scenarios here. I mean, I see one where Bradley is the younger guy, and he can physically outwork him. He's a physically bigger guy. Marquez is older. Marquez could be coming off that major performance. He finally got it. He finally beat his rival. And now anything else is like, doesn't live up to it. And but then on the other hand, I see Marquez being such a good technical boxer that, you know, he can really frustrate Bradley. Bradley's also damaged his kids right now. But the one scenario that just keeps flashing in my head over and over is cuts are going to play a factor. And the reason I say that is Bradley's like a miniature version of an Evander Holyfield, especially late in Holyfield's career when he had a shaved head. And I can see that happening, and Marquez has start the show. Honestly, I would not be surprised if this fight ended on a technical draw or a tech, and it gets stopped on a Marquez cut and goes to the cards. That's the one scenario I just keep seeing over and over and over that I can't shake.
Well, Bradley, I don't know. I mean, this is a fight where he can really prove himself and prove his doubters wrong. I think he's under a lot of pressure, well, way more so than Marquez. I mean, Marquez can retire a hero even if he loses.
Really?
So.
I mean, he's the whole thing. He's in the whole thing. 5 years from the day he retires, we're taking him to Canastota and they're putting him on the car and he's going to sign an autograph. He's in the whole thing.
I'm sure he'd love to win just as much as Bradley, but I think Bradley has all the advantages going into this one, all the reasons why he has to win.
Bradley had that really shifty performance for Gavrikov. He got beat up in that fight. I mean, he won on the cards, but if you would have, like, in boxing is funny sometimes, and I always tell people this, I say, in a boxing match, you score 12 individual rounds. Now, some rounds might be a difference of more than 1 point, but you get a situation where a guy can win, say, 7 or 8 of the 12 rounds, barely. He can win those rounds barely when I'm real close. And the 4 or 5 rounds he loses, he could get his ass kicked. But when it comes to the cards, he still wins because he won the majority of the rounds. Now, and not only take a sport like hockey, because a hockey fight is one long. It's, you know, from beginning to end, usually you're only a few seconds. But imagine if it was like a 36-minute hockey fight, which obviously of course you'll never see. But at the end of that, who won that complete mass of that fight? And, you know, the Bradley-Kovrennikov fight, Bradley won more rounds, but Kovrennikov did more damage in the rounds he won.
Yeah, actually, on FightOpinion.com, they brought his name up with brain injuries.
I know.
So that was kind of interesting, because they had a big discussion on there about guy in the UFC named Ben Rothwell, a heavyweight fighter in the UFC, just got suspended for 9 months for elevated levels of testosterone. And this is a guy who had an exemption for TRT use, and he used an excuse to get the exemption that he'd been in a car accident that had given him brain damage. And one of the reasons why your body can suddenly stop producing enough testosterone is because of brain damage. So, you know, it kind of begs the question, should we be letting fighters use that excuse when they shouldn't be even fighting in the first place if they have brain damage, right? Confirmed brain damage. But Timothy Bradley's name was brought up because of that Provodnikov fight, and, you know, whether he should even be fighting because of the damage he took in that type of fight. So,
I mean, he was beat up in that fight.
So I guess both sides have their weaknesses there going into this fight. And it should be pretty evenly matched, I think. I give both guys a shot at winning.
Bradley's a good fighter. He's, you know, he's strong, he's physical, he's got good skills. Like I said, in his last two fights, I mean, I think Pacquiao took the shit out of him and just eased off the gas, which was his own stupid fault. And Bradley won more rounds. I'll give you that, you know. But if you scored that as a 12-round fight, Bradley wins. If you scored as a one singular round, Kovrennikov would have won. And Bradley was losing that fight, and he beat up.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be one of those one of those possible classics, I guess you could call it. Especially if it turns out to be the last fight for Marquez. But
I think
those guys, he was really built up early in his career. It wasn't always as great as what they thought he was. And then as soon as they started testing him, he started to show some major holes that might never get fixed. You know, you just keep fighting with those, thinking he's so great because he's got all those ones stringed together. But somebody like Marquez could really give him a wake-up call.
Oh, absolutely. Marquez is a hell of a player, you know.
Speaking of holes in your game, I think Miguel Cotto working with Freddie Roach is an interesting development. And
well, it is. Because when Miguel's father passed away, who was his lead guy, I think that not only hurt him, you know, spiritually, I think that really took effect on his boxing game. And, I mean, I think really, really took effect on his boxing game. Now, I don't think Miguel would have beaten Floyd Mayweather 2 years ago, or last year, whatever it was. But at the same time, if Miguel Sr. was in his corner, I don't know. You know?
Right.
Miguel gave a hell of a win that fight. Then the Austin Trout fight, you know, he fought well, but, you know, I think more emotionally than anything, the loss of his father really hurt him. And I think Freddie being in there is almost like a father figure.
Yeah. Well, now, I don't know if it's officially been inked, but it sounds like it's all but official that Cotto's going to go up against Sergio Martinez, Nick.
Wow, that'll be interesting.
And that's, you know, if that doesn't give him another shot at glory, I don't know what does. I don't think he's got a chance to you know, get a rematch with Mayweather anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean,
I came up with a theory the other day. It's just, you know,
the first fight was good, but I don't think it was enough to warrant a rematch.
Yeah. I was thinking the other day, you know, Floyd would be the type of person who would pull something like, you know, having this last fight against Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, right.
Just holding him over the barrel till the very end, waiting until he gets seasoned enough to get beaten, I guess.
But at the same time, you know, a couple of years ago, Floyd was doing well. You know, obviously he was doing real well. But they needed, it was a little bit, they needed each other. But then Pacquiao, you know, obviously, you know, had the two losses. One of them, okay, controversial. But the other one, sure, I wasn't controversial. You had the controversial win over Marquez in there. He had an uninspiring performance in the middle of that, you know. So it was like, okay, is he finally starting to, lose interest in the fight game? On the fact that some fighters age differently. You know, we're going to get on certain guys because of their style, they can fight for a long time. And I'm not talking about the guys like Jordan Foreman either. I'm talking about the guys like Bernard Hopkins because they have such a style of defense and technical proficiency. They can fight a long time because they don't take a lot of punishment and they're always in shape. It's not like they're harming their body by getting so far out of shape and then trying to kill them to get back in. Other guys, like, you know, Pacquiao is a guy that always enjoyed. And I'm not saying, you know, with alcohol or drugs or anything like that. He's a guy that always enjoyed, like a party type of atmosphere. He's a guy that enjoyed, you know, being out, playing pool, being with friends, doing things like that. And now he's got his political aspirations. He's got so many things that I think is finally making him want to do other things that I don't think he's got his eye on the prize as much anymore.
Right.
And that's just, you know, my opinion on it.
Well, there's another story. Go through just... I guess we'll try Travis right after this. But I sent both you and Tom this one. Of course, we've heard about a sequel to the movie The Fighter with Lee Ward. And we were hoping that would happen. and have the Gotti fights involved. And from what I heard, probably about a year ago now, they were already in production on that. They were ready to go. But then I remember reading something about Mark Wahlberg selling his house that had the boxing gym in it. So it kind of made me think, well, maybe he's getting rid of that whole concept, doesn't want to do that character anymore. But apparently now they're doing a whole new movie on Gotti, Arturo Gotti.
Yeah, I saw that.
And the character they're picking to play Gotti is Turtle from Entourage. The character of Turtle, played by Jerry Ferrara, who's kind of like a short fat kid on the show. But supposedly he's lost a lot of weight. It has to be a lot of weight.
Yeah, right.
Got it. And for one, he doesn't even look like Gotti. So I don't know how they're going to look like Gotti.
And funny, because I know you're talking about Eric Dean a little bit. The perfect example of something I read along the same lines that a couple years ago, Billy Crystal was making a movie from the home run race between Adam Matter and Mickey Mantle to, Yankees legends, which I'm sure you're loving. But the one thing he said was the two actors he picked never played baseball, but one looked a spitting image of Maris, the other was a spitting image of Mantle. And, he could teach them enough baseball to make it passable, with through editing and everything, but you can't teach somebody how to look like somebody.
Right.
And we all have mannerisms. I mean, everybody always says, if there was an actor that could play you, who would it be? Well, I don't know who the hell I'd get to play me. I'd have to get somebody that's got, a little bit of cockiness, a little bit of, South Philly attitude to them, and then go from there. And hopefully the person looks like me. Now, the thing is, if you get somebody that wants to play me and they want to play me in a boxing role or whatever, you can teach them enough boxing that through editing, it'll work. The person could be weak enough that they couldn't crack an egg with a punch. But you have to throw a couple left hooks against the bag, you get some sound effects, and boom, boom, boom. As long as they got a good team, and they have a stocky build, and they got, that South Philly look to them, it'll pass. And people will think it's me.
Right. Well, that's Mark Wahlberg.
He's committed to look like somebody.
Mark Wahlberg is going to be involved in this movie. He's going to be a producer. And also, for some reason, NFL star Michael Strahan is involved. Not sure what
he is. He knows a big boxing fan. I know that.
Yeah. And nobody knows who's going to play Ward. It doesn't sound like Mark is going to play Ward again. So it'll be interesting to see how they develop this one. With what direction they go with it. Let's try Travis one more time. I guess after that, if we don't get him, we'll have to call an audible. See if we can squeeze him on another week. Second chance.
Hello.
Hello, Travis.
Yes.
Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
I'm wonderful. How about yourself?
Sorry about
I missed your call earlier.
That's all right. That's why we have 2 hours of the show.
Awesome.
So we got time. We're also on the line with Tony the Tornado Pinnacal from Philadelphia. He's our boxing rain man, we call him.
Wonderful. How you doing, Tony?
I'm doing good.
All right.
Fantastic.
So, Travis, tell us a little bit about what you got going on these days.
Well, I have a few things that I'm working on now. I'm working on returning back to the ring to fight, as well as promote. I'm excited about that. I'm actually doing a show. I'm not very sure if I'll probably be fighting on this particular card, but I'll be promoting a card in December. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I'll be returning myself in the ring, you know, before the year's up.
Awesome. And what moment did you decide to...
For the very least in the beginning of the year.
Okay. What motivated you to decide to come back to the sport, to fight?
Well, just seeing a lot of the fights and, that's been taking place over the course of the last year or so, and... Just really, you know, kind of comparing my talents and skills to some of the fighters that are out there, and I'm like, well, you know what? I think I can become a 3-time world champion. I think I have what it takes to beat any of these top guys out there. And you know, I know boxing is you know, we have a great outlook and a great talent that are coming up, and I think I should know that my skills would. We're possibly in a lot of these fights out there.
And Travis, I'll tell you one of my one of the things I enjoy is just knowing a lot about, you know, boxing and actually surprising people. And a couple of years ago, when he actually had since moved back to Connecticut, I lived 20 miles outside of Philadelphia. I had a gentleman in the house by the name of Eric Woods, I think his name was. He was a pinball repairman. He was fixing the pinball machine for me. He comes down, he's in my basement where my gym is, and he sees all my boxing memorabilia. He's like, oh, you're into boxing? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you probably never heard of these guys, but up where I'm originally from, there are two twin boxers, and they were both, you know, championship-level fighters. And I said, well, try me. He goes, Travis and Tarvis Sims. I'm like, yeah, I've seen them fight. I've seen them both on TV. And the guy's jaw dropped. He goes, you know him? I said, well, not personally, but I sure as hell seen him. And just to get his reaction from that was legendary.
Wow. Well, I mean, you know, boxing is it's an amazing sport, and fighters such as myself and my twin brother Tarvis, we're well known, this fight has not having the television coverage as a lot of fighters that are well known. So, you know, and that hopefully we can change that within, you know, the course of the next few years, you know, with getting that kind of TV exposure and really getting our names out there. Even at this stage of our careers. And I mean, I think if half of my fights would have been televised, I think I'd probably have been a bigger star as any of the fighters that's out there today or in the past. Especially with myself and my twin brother, you know, with our versatility in fights and being able to fight southpaw and right hand and being, you know, having the speed and the movement and the power. I think that, you know, those are skills that makes fights are very enticing and being able to adjust and fights and things of that nature just makes, you know, fighters look superior. And I look forward to, you know, coming back to the sport and displaying a lot of those skills and matching up against some of the top fighters in the world.
Yeah, and, you know, here's one thing I would like to talk about. When it came to certain fighters that never got the proper recognition early in their career. I'm a Philadelphia guy. I grew up, you know, watching fights out of Philadelphia. I trained in Philadelphia with a lot of really good fighters that never got their, you know, proper due. So a lot of great trainers that never got their proper due. But even as a young man growing up, getting into my teenage years and really getting into boxing, I remember watching a fighter that sometimes would fight a swing fight on ESPN or USA, and then for a while, you know, he was fighting on these little obscure back cable channels that nobody ever watched, except I saw there was live boxing on TV, and I was going to watch it, and nobody paid 2 cents worth of attention to this guy, and I just liked him because he was a good, tough Philadelphia fighter, and I thought he had a good gimmick, and I could not believe that people weren't knocking on the door to put this guy on TV because his gimmick was that entertaining. And his name is Bernard Hopkins. And look where he came from. And he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I used to love his gimmick because he would come to the ring. I also like to watch a lot of professional wrestling. And he looked at me as like, he had the perfect gimmick to translate right to a professional wrestling, where he's coming to the ring, he's got the executioner mask on, he's got these two huge bodybuilders with masks on, carrying axes. And I'm like, that is so cool. And nobody was like, and I understand, okay, now as I'm older and I look at it, you know, more objectively, it can be difficult to deal with. But what doesn't matter was, I could find any other gimmick that fans want to see. What do you want?
Well, I mean, I the last part of your comment was kind of distorted from as was S.A.C. Jekyll, but I heard the first part about Bernard Hopkins and the executioner with the mask, etc. But you know, see, fighters are creative and. You know, we're not just fighters, we're entertainers, and guys like Bernard, I mean, they really, really, really help the sport by, you know, dramatizing the sport and you know, coming up with these concepts of coming in as an execution with the mask and things of that nature. And I mean, that's what boxing is all about, you know, and I think you got to make it more theatrical, you know, even better. You know, and you see a lot of fighters that are coming up nowadays that are kind of taking on the executioner type of mantra to promote themselves as fighters. You know, and I think that it's entertaining at the end of the day. You know, and fans, that's what they want to be. They want to be entertained on every level. And I think that's where boxing is going. I think that's where television networks, that's actually what they want to see. They want to see the young fighter that's coming up that has a catchy, you know, nickname or ring name, et cetera, and, you know, have some creativity there. And I think that, you know, especially young fighters and, you know, I think it would be great for the sport, and I think they will continue to do very well in the sport. And I mean, I'm excited about the direction that boxing is going, and with all the Mayweather fights, you know, with the money team, et cetera. I mean, I think it's a lot of good marketing power that's being generated by these guys, and I'm excited about the direction that the boxing is going at this point.
Well, usually,
one
thing
I
wish most people point out about criticism of boxing or even MMA is that you don't know enough about the fighters to get involved. So, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background. How did you first get into the sport, and what do you like most about being involved in boxing?
Well, my twin brother and I, we're the youngest of eight children, and my father, you know, he always boxed when he was in the military, and then when he got out of the military, you know, raised in Philadelphia, and they moved from Florida and they went to Philadelphia. And all my father and all his brothers, they boxed in Philadelphia. My father won the Golden Gloves out there, and I actually have medals from some of the championships that he won out there back in like 1940, 41, somewhere around there. And boxing always been entrenched into my blood. And even though my twin brother and I, we played. Many other sports, you know, we were very good in all the other sports, but there was something about, you know, that competitive spirit, something about that one-on-one competition, you know, that boxing gave me and my twin brother. We just wanted to be fighters. I'm glad that I chose the sport. It made me a two-time world champion. You know, I had a great-grandfather that also boxed as well. So, and all his brothers boxed. So, I mean, we have a pretty entrenched history of boxing in my family. My twin brother and I, we're the fifth generation in of boxing in my family. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm the only world champion fighter out of all of us, but I'm sure that we could produce a lot more of it.
Cool. And what do you enjoy most about the sport?
Excuse me?
What do you love most about it, boxing in general?
What I like most about boxing?
Well, I mean, there's a lot I like about boxing. You know, I mean, you know, just opportunities to for young poor black men and just men in general. It doesn't even have to be black, but just get that. It gives a you know, young men in America opportunity to change their lives as they know it. You know, I mean, you can be a poor kid in the ghetto, poor kid suburban area, but then, you know, with one fight or the right fight and the right opportunity, you can change your life and really, you know, be in control of your destiny and the direction that your life is going and through boxing. I mean, it's such a unique sport. And, you know, you just got to stay, you know, diligent and focused. And, you know, and I mean, you know, you can really do some great things here with the sport of boxing. So, I mean, there's many, many opportunities in this sport to really, you know, to catapult your whole life and your career to a whole nother level. And sometimes, you know, they got an issue of taking advantage of that. You know, and I think some guys, they just kind of missed the boat, you know. But I'm extremely happy for my opportunities of being a two-time world champion. And hopefully, you know, I'll be blessed to have another opportunity to become a world champion again.
And how about the toughest guy you ever fought?
There's a few guys that, you know, they were tough fights. You know, some guys were early on in my career. Some guys were, you know, during my career. But I will say this. My toughest fight still today, probably as a fighter, was I was fighting a kid that was, his name was John Lennox Lewis out of Queens, New York. And I was fighting at the Amazora. This kid that was fighting at the catchweight, I was a 154-pound fighter. He was fighting at, I believe, super middleweight, light heavyweight. And we fought at the catchweight of, I believe, like 162, somewhere around there. And this guy had muscles coming from everywhere. And he was, you know, he was just a mammoth beast, you know. And I was looking at this guy like, Jesus, what did my trainer do to me? I mean, they kind of set me up or what? But this guy was huge, and I was like, wow. And so, you know, we had a very competitive fight, and that was my first time as a pro fighter being hit, like, you know, really, really hard and really, really being concerned in that fight. And that proved to me that I really had what it takes to be a champion. That fight there really kind of, you know, put things in perspective for me and really let me know that, hey, you know what, you win this fight here, like, you know, impressively and the way, and excitingly the way that I beat him. And I didn't just beat him, I knocked him out. So, you know, it was a great fight for the first, you know, well, throughout the entire fight. But, I mean, the fight lasted for, what, I believe, 3 or 4 rounds. But I mean, every fight was, I mean, every punch was, and every round was just action packed, and we went toe to toe, and then eventually, you know, I ended up knocking him out. And I mean, but still today, that's the toughest fight I ever had in my life.
Wow. How about favorite fighters of all time and right now? You got anybody that you tried to pick up your own moves from, or just like to watch in general?
Well, you know, I've always been a student of the game and been a fan of the sport. And, you know, since I was young, my father and my grandfather, they always have us sitting down and watching a lot of the old fighters, Sugar Robinson. I used to love watching that guy fight and watching Jake Tuffin coming up through the 70s, and also just watching old fights of guys like Kid Gavlin and Willie Peck and, you know, Chico Vijar, you know, guys, Joe Lewis, you know. But I tell you, you know, I'm just a fan and appreciative of the sport, and you know, I can't say I just had one favorite fighter. But if I did have to just single out one guy that I really admired as a fighter, it would be Sugar Ray Robinson. He's probably my all-time favorite fighter.
Okay.
Tony probably knows more about him than I do, but.
Is it Sugar Ray Robinson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably the most famous for his.
What?
Six weeks.
Can you not say about the guy?
Mata.
Sugar Ray Robinson, you know, just even watching tapes of him today, I mean, you can just see that the guy was special. I mean, the guy could actually flat out tap dance. And his feet were just so amazing that, I mean, he literally glided across the ring. I mean, this is a guy that would throw a jab and then hook off the jab and then follow with five more hooks. You know, and everything was technically perfect. And when, if you were constructing a fighter and you're doing speed, power, footwork, movement, defense, chin, hook, he has to be Robinson.
Wow. Funny story about Sugar Ray Robinson. I remember my cousin had the latest Xbox back in, I think it was like 2006, and the big Fight Night game, the new Fight Night game came out. And Sugar Ray Robinson was the only guy I could ever use to beat my cousin when he was playing Muhammad Ali. So we would always have epic battles between the two of them on that game. For some reason, their styles really matched up well. But, of course, obviously, they never fought in real life. That would be kind of hard. But, yeah, he's a heck of a legend.
What a lot of people don't remember is who Styles lost
to the heat, not to the opponent. I'm hearing muffled conversations. I'm not hearing clearly what you guys are stating about Sugar Ray Robinson or what have you. I heard, again, different pieces of his footwork, et cetera. But, you know, Boston is totally different than it is today. However, you still have the contrast of fighters that have a lot of similarities to fighters even of that era. And again, Sugar Ray Robinson, you know, I always admire his speed, his power, his ring generalship, his swiftness within the ring. And, you know, and I try to idolize, you know, I idolize him for those skills, and I try to implement a lot of what he's done as a fighter and his preparation as a fighter into my training regimen and arsenal as a fighter. And I that's what I do. I study a lot of great fighters, and I try to take a little bit of what make them special, and I try to add that into my repertoire as a fighter and just try to be more well-rounded and complete fighter. And, and those are the type of skills that fighters that want to be great. I think that that's those skills they need to focus on and try to hone to be a better fighter than some of the fighters of the best. You know, so, I mean, and I think that those are the kind of skills you want to kind of teach and translate into other younger fighters. So, you know, when, you know, the next group of individuals that comes up, and you know, you have a very special talent that has a combined fight style that conduces to a lot of the fighters of the past. And I think that, you know, if we start reinventing the wheel and just train fighters to be great fighters and train them the way that we do, that some of the other fighters did in the past, I think that we will have some very exciting fights, producing a lot of good fighters out here in America. And I think a lot of the European countries are catching on to that.
Well, looking at boxing as a whole right now, obviously there's a lot of people over the years that have kept claiming that boxing is dead or dying. It seems to be doing pretty well. What do you think about the whole state of the sport, where it's going right now?
I think the sport is in great hands, and I think that, you know, I see a lot of comparisons with boxing, the UFC, and, you know, MMA. But I think each one of those, you know, they have, each one of those sports, they pretty much they have, like, their own identity. And I don't think they're, you know, one is really doing better than the other. But I will say that I think boxing is you know, is the all time, you know, American sport, if you will, other than baseball, you know. And I think that, you know, boxing is here forever, and I don't think it will never be overtaken by any of the other sports, you know. And I just think that the other sports, you know, a rendition of boxing, and I think they just, you know, bringing on another sector of that. But I don't think that they would just, you know, be so much more superior than boxing at even at the highest point in the sport. I just think that boxing is, you know, it has a bright future. I think that boxing is been around longer than any of the other sports, and I think boxing, you know, it's going to, you know, we have a very, very bright future for the sport of boxing. I mean, I'm excited about it. I think that we, you know, it's going to continue to produce great talent and future Hall of Famers. You know, I'm excited.
And what's your ultimate goal with everything, the promotion as well as the, you know, the comeback, of course?
I'm sorry?
What's your ultimate goal with boxing as far as both the promotion and the, you know, the career comeback here?
Well, you know, my goal is, again, to come back and, you know, win another world title, secure my legacy in this sport that I've dedicated my whole life to, and hopefully, you know, kind of just change the you know, the status quo of being a boxer, and also you know, add the promotion to it, and then hopefully, you know, I can be one of the greatest promoters as well. You know, I've been, you know, with a lot of these promoters out here. I've been with the Don Kings, and, you know, like I said, you know, I have some high points in my career with those guys, and I've had some very low points. But, you know, I try not to dwell on and reflect back on those low points. I just try to take what I can as from being a fighter with some of these top promoters, and you know, just take all the skills and knowledge and education that I gained from these promoters, and try to use that to be a better fighter as well as a promoter. And, you know, I hopefully, you know, once, you know, the Don Kings and the Bob Arums of the world are the Bellas and so on, when those guys are long gone out of the sport, and, you know, you have fresh young talent such as myself that we're looking to put on very competitive fights here in you know, in America and around the world. I mean, you got guys like Della Hoya, Shane Mosley, Bernard Hopkins. These guys are doing a phenomenal job with Golden Boy, and hopefully, you know, we can continue to build marquee promotions like Golden Boy, and build very competitive fights throughout the world, you know. And I'm excited about the direction of fighting and promoting at especially in this stage in my career.
Yeah, it's really more fighters involved in promotion than actual promoters now.
Say that again?
It's getting to be there's more fighters involved in promotion than the actual promoters who started.
I think fighters are becoming a lot smarter than what they used to be. You know, I think they become more businessmen, you know, versus just fighters, you know. And I think they're starting to learn getting the understanding of the business aspect of entertainment. And I think it's a great thing, you know. And again, that's also giving fighters a better opportunity to secure their future, not just, you know, not just and just in the sport of boxing, but, you know, in general, in life in general. And I think that, you know, it's a great thing. I mean, can you imagine if guys like Sugar Ray Robinson and Max Schmeling and Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, George Foreman, these guys that were able to fight and promote themselves the way fighters are doing today, you know, is, you know, no doubt in my mind, some of those guys would have been, they've been, you know, downright some of the best promoters in the world, because these guys were, they were competitors. And these guys were, you know, they're legends in the sport, and these guys fought like every week. You know, it's not like how it is today where these guys are now. You're limited by commissions where you're only fighting, you know, once every 90 days or something or what have you. You know, these guys used to fight like every week, you know, sometimes two and three times a week. So, you know, these guys had control of their careers as promoters, et cetera, and had more executive decisions over their careers. I think, you know, some of those guys have been bigger promoters than some of the promoters of that currently today, like a Don King of Bobby here. So I think it's a great thing that fighters are becoming, again, more business savvy and having a better knowledge and understanding of their sport.
Yeah, George Foreman actually just got involved himself in promotion not too long ago. A few months ago, I remember talking about that story.
Yeah.
He got a whole production company now. And of course, you mentioned that it would be great if he had done it during his career. But guys like that are great for the sport. He's always a very well-liked guy. He's a you know, very religious guy, obviously. And so, you know, he's not going to screw people over or lie, cheat, and steal like some other promoters have done over the years. So it's great.
No, certainly.
I think Tony wanted to say something.
Yeah, I think really noticed over the career for almost a decade, a lot of these fighters.
There's a huge echo. I can't even decipher what you're actually saying, Tony. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
Can you
hear me now?
You can give it a go.
Let me try again. What I'll say about a lot of fighters getting into the promotion now, the Hopkins, the De La Hoya, Shane Mosley, Floyd Mayweather, a lot of these guys know what it's like to really bust their rear ends trying to get a good deal and fighting. And, you know, seeing a lot of times promoters that never took those punches. Bob Arum, I don't think he ever got hit with a punch in his life. And I know De La Hoya had a lot of battles with him. I know Mayweather's had battles with promotions. Bernard Hopkins feuded with every promoter alive. And now that there's more acrimonious, it's, you know, or I should say more harmonious, they're dealing with each other, because a fighter turned promoter is less likely to screw his fighters. And I know we were just saying that, and that's part of the reason I think why. A fighter knows what it's like to get in there, knows what it's like to bust his ass in training camp, knows what it's like to really do everything that he needs to, you know, make it successful. And he's going to appreciate more than the fact he's not going to appreciate, you know, or he's going to appreciate, you know, the hard work it takes, not just to rip off, you know, his fighters to make the buck for himself.
Well, I mean, you know, those are some pretty good points. But, you know, I mean, you know, there's always, you know, going to be that dark cloud hanging over the head of the sport and of promoters. And it's up to fighters that turn promoters. It's up to us to change that stigma of promoters. I want to make sure that I'm putting on some of the most competitive fights out there. And but at the same time, I want to make sure that every fighter that steps in that ring, they're being compensated, you know, and not being, you know, going in there even as an opponent or what have you, that you're going in there and you're only getting $100 for the fight. You know, I think that's grossly disgusting. I think that, you know, fighters should be compensated fairly and you know, and paid on a higher pay scale. I know you have some promoters out there that will beg to differ with that, because again, the promoter, they want to make, you know, it's a business and they want to make all the, you know, as much as money as they can. But I just think that, you know, there should be a level playing field here where fighters out there who are taking the most risk, that they're being more more evenly compensated, you know, in the sport than what they are being paid today. You know, I think that, you know, as a promoter, that would certainly put me in a position where I have firsthand understanding and knowledge on what these guys actually go through. I know what it's like, you know, being in training camps and being away from your families and, having a strict diet and, being your whole life just being restricted for that whole period, you know, and duration of your of preparing for a world title fight. And you know, again, it's not even about even preparing for a world title fight, just preparing for a fight in general. You know, more of an athlete on this planet takes more abuse and being restricted and having less as a fighter in any other sport. And I think that, you know, a fighter should be, you know, evenly compensated as some of these other top athletes in the world, you know, from basketball, football, and baseball. You know, I think that boxers should have their just due, you know, I'm excited about, you know, being able to change that, that dark shadow of boxing and hopefully, you know, being one of the pioneers of change, you know, being a change agent for fighters and being able to get fighters the marketing power and as well as bringing that to the sport and really building off of that and really turning fighters into businessmen. And I think that if we're able to start getting guys to fighters in general to start thinking more on those lines than just, okay, I'm just a fighter, and look at it as, hey, I'm a fighter, but I'm also a businessman and having a greater understanding of the sport. I think that, you know, most fighters would be better off.
Great point. We have our third host on the line, I think, now. Psychic Tom, can you hear us out there?
Good evening, gentlemen, and good evening to you, Travis. And congratulations
to you as well.
Yes, sir, and congratulations on such an outstanding career. And my observation, I'd like to ask you a question, is I noticed that you didn't turn pro until age 26, but you had quite a big amateur background. Now, my question is, did you find that it was really tough to get out of the amateur mold, or did you just sort of segue right into the pro style?
Well, I think, you know, my style, overdeveloping my style from youth, you know, just being in the sport since I was 5 years old, you know, I was always looking to better myself and always looking at professionals to resemble myself or pick up different skills and tactics, et cetera. And I think once I started developing myself and after some of these professions, I've started to develop the professional style even as an amateur. And I think that, early on in my career, I would always have a style to be a professional fighter. And I think that was ultimately what every fighter's dream was, too, when they become an Olympic gold medalist and then turn professional and become a world champion. And I just think that, you know, for over the years, that the many years I've been developing my honing my skills as a fighter, I became a professional fighter even while I was in the amateurs. And I thought it was just a great transition once I did decide to turn pro. But I was having so much fun in the amateurs and always looking to hopefully, you know, fight on an Olympic team and become a world, you know, to win the gold medal and then hopefully, you know, test the waters of the profession. But, you know, I you know, came close, never had an opportunity to represent the United States Olympic team and And after, you know, two or three tries, I decided, you know, to at that point to go professional. And prior to turning pro, I ended up signing with Palmas Iliadis. He was the promoter for Lennox Lewis and Montel Griffin back in the late 90s, you know, the mid to late 90s. And it was just ironic. We were actually at a fight, and I was in Atlantic City, and I was still amateur, and we were actually watching the first fight between Rory Jones and Montel Griffin. And Bob Siliadis stated to me, I was introduced to him, and I told him who I was. And you know, we had a great conversation, and he was like, wow, I really like this guy, Breakfast Guy. And he goes, you know what? If Montel Griffin wins this fight tonight, he said, I'm going to sign you tonight. And I was like, wow, I'm proud sitting there praying. I'm like, man, Montel win this fight. I need you to win this fight. But Montel, he was beating Roy Jones here easy. I mean, I never saw a fight, you know, Roy Jones big taking it. I was saying to be up against the opposition like that, where he was actually being dominated throughout the entire, from round to round. And I was like, wow. And this was like a dream come true. This was a miracle. I was like, Roy Jones Jr. is actually being dominated by Montel Griffin. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I started really believing prayer then. And I was like, man, I was praying that he did it. But when it was starting to manifest and really start to really happen, I was like right before my eyes. I couldn't believe it. So I was like, man, prayer is powerful. So, and Montel, he was beating Rory every round. And then I guess at one point Rory caught him, and he took a knee, and then Rory did the unthinkable and hit him while he was down. And Montel won the fight by disqualification, and that was Rory Jones' first loss. So I was excited. You know, I hate to see Rory have a loser. He was like one of the great talents and fighters of that era. And hate to see him lose like that, but hey, that I'm kind of glad he did, because that gave me a promotion contract with Parents Promotions at the time, and I was very thankful for that fight. I was very thankful for that contract work. So he very helped me get signed.
Oh, what a story! Yeah, that's great.
We had Roy Jones on the show.
It was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, and one of the things I always remember about him is he talked just as fast as he threw punches.
Yeah,
he is a very fast talker. Very entertaining too. He definitely knows his sport. Yeah, he's another one that got involved in the promotional game. Like he's got something called Square Ring Promotions or something like that down in Florida.
Yeah.
That's another guy.
I believe he got a he owns a company, Square Ring. I know he had John Wirt, who was actually running the company for him. I'm not exactly sure if John is still affiliated with his company. But again, Rory, you know, as he decided, Rory to probably be one of the greatest promoters as well. You know, come out of. Out of Florida, you know, and then being, you know, the next fighter that's been at the very top and the pinnacle of the sport, and being the face of the sport for many years, you know, I think he would be an awesome promoter as well, you know, and I think he would be just as great as Del Arroyo, you know, and it'd be a great competition for promoters, you know. Today, if you know, you get fighters turned promoters that really understand the sport, I think we could do great things.
Yeah, it's interesting too the way he's gotten a couple of these MMA fighters, Quentin Jackson and Anderson Silva, there talking about crossing over just to box him once.
Well, I would say this, I think it'd be an easier transition for professional fighters to cross over to be MMA fighters versus MMA fighters crossing over to be a professional boxer. Because, again, those guys, they depend on, their ground game, their grappling, their wrestling. But if you look at the average MMA fighter, these guys aren't real boxers. These guys, you have some of that with those decent combinations, but at the end of the day, those guys don't train to do combinations, in that sense, like a professional fighter would. So I would say, it would be a harder task for those guys to try to cross over from being an MMA fighter to a professional boxer. I think it would be a hard adjustment for most of those guys.
Yeah,
I'm a fan of the sport. I would love to see some of these fighters that will at least try to give it a try. It's like they say some football player they couldn't turn from being a basketball player or a football player and become a boxer, but then you have some of them that really had some pretty good talent. So my motto is, if you feel great about yourself and you feel that you have the ability to go in there and be productive in fighting as a fighter, as a boxer, then so be it. Go ahead. And you just gotta be prepared and know what you get yourself involved in.
Right. Cool. Well, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to, thank, or say hello to out there?
I'd like to give a shout out to my trainer is Byron Oglesby down in Atlanta, Georgia. My trainer Norma Lork in Brooklyn, New York, and I also want to give a big shout out to he's no longer with us, but I know he's watching over us right now. He's part of most of the fighters today that's down in Brooklyn, New York. He trained a lot of us and he helped us all develop hone our skills in the gym. His name is Victor Roundtree. You guys probably most know him from being Danny Jacobs' trainer, he passed away last week, and he had a stringer today. And my twin brother and I, we drove down to Brooklyn to his wake and funeral today. And I want to give a big shout out to Victor and his family. He was a great guy, and he's a great, great loss to the sport of boxing. And I know he's going to watch over us and make sure that we become the great boxers and promoters that he always believed in us and know that we could be. So, I also want to give a great shout out to all the fighters in Brooklyn, New York, and Connecticut as well.
Awesome. And how do people find you online or with this new promotional company? Do you have a name for it or anything like that?
The promotion company name is Tremendous Promotion. We have a website that's under construction, and we'll be doing within the next few months or so, we'll be doing a huge campaign and getting our name out there. But stay focused and keep an ear open for Tremendous Promotions. We'll be on the websites. We'll be on the advertisements. All around on the boxing media, and starting with you guys first. I'm excited about my promotion company. I'm excited about my return back to the ring at 42. You got guys like Shane Mosley, who's getting ready to come back and fight Anthony Ludane. These guys are, roughly around the same age, I want to put my hat back put my name back into the hat and hopefully get one of these big premier fights or get my just due as being a two-time world champion.
All right.
Well, we'll definitely keep an eye out for you. Is there anybody you particularly want to call out or want to come back as an opponent of in your first fight?
Well, I will necessarily say that, I'm actually, going through a vetting process and looking at different guys to match up against in my return. But I would love to get in there with any of the top guys that's out there. You know, whether it's it's a Canelo Alvarez, a Floyd Mayweather Jr. Obviously, to be the best in the sport, you got to beat the best. And I think that's every fighter's dream is to fight the best guys out there. You know, and for me, it always seems to elude. The best fights out there always seem to elude me, mandatory to fight, Oscar De La Hoya, mandatory to fight Shane Mosley, mandatory to fight Lucy Wright, and for whatever reason, and mandatory to fight Sergio Martinez, but, those fights always elude me for whatever reason. I just think that, the promoters, they're so invested into their fighters that they kill the sport because they don't let the best and greatest fights take place because they're trying to protect their own personal interests, and I understand that from a business perspective. But I think if they really want to see the best talent out there, they got to kind of get out their own way and let these fights manifest and take place. And I think boxing will have a great future. But I think that it's a little overshadowed when you start pitting promoters against one another.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of Reggie Johnson. I used to talk to him. I always say, I'm not interested in fighting guys from the bus stop.
No, we love fighting, but we don't want to fight for free.
Yeah. All right, Travis. Well, it's been great connecting with you and chatting with you here, and we will definitely keep in touch, and you can send us any kind of promotional material you have over the next few months as you're building this, and we'll get it out there on the website.
Absolutely. You guys have been great. I thank you guys for the opportunity, and I look forward to conversing with you guys even more.
Cool.
All right, Travis. Best of luck.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Not know before we set up this interview that he was considering a comeback to boxing in general. I thought he was just working on the promotional side, but that's definitely interesting. We could definitely see him on the big screen within the next few months here, I would say. I'm sure there would be tons of promoters looking to line him up for a fight. But it's very interesting to me that he doesn't want to come back against just anybody. He wants to fight the best. Shows you how committed he is. Anyway, Tom is on the line. We haven't really talked much MMA here. I got a ton of MMA stories to cover here. Number one, the Ultimate Fighter fight. I didn't watch the whole episode. I just watched the fight today. It was on the Los Angeles Times website for some reason. They had the full fight. It was a pretty intense fight. Raquel Pennington versus, what was her name? Jessamyn Duke.
Yeah, Jessica.
A lot of those people on the show claimed that was one of the best fights, period, on the show. And it was kind of like one guy said it was the equivalent of Forrest Griffin versus Stephen Bonner.
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far. But I do say that both of them later on the line, and it's kind of one of those fights that you hated to see anyone lose, but someone had to come up a little short. I like that cliche, there was really no loser, even though you know that technically there was. But
yeah, there was definitely a lot of back and forth there. I had the feeling that both of them were pacing themselves at certain points and, really a little bit more respecting their opponents than some of the other fights we've seen. I mean, at least
other, and they were both just continuously wading in at certain points, and, you know, very, not so much cautious, but very, you know, technical strategy-wise, and I thought both of them were very defensive at times as well as offensive, and just all around showed just how talented the females can be, and it's a very big eye-opener for a lot of people who are watching this series, hoping for it to fail, and for the women to win it, you know, not as tough as they really are. It's pretty intense. Another funny story I have about MMA, there was a fight, I think it was in Brazil, it doesn't really say in this article, but it was definitely a guy from Brazil involved, Claudini Angelo. He was actually controlling his fight against fellow countryman Ivelacio Silva when he requested the bout be stopped so he could replace his mouthpiece. And that was something that had already caused the fight to be stopped multiple times already. So the referee refused the timeout. And so Claudine Angelo there started pacing around the mat, realized that the cage door was locked, so he jumped up and over the steel cage and so it's probably the first ring escape submission.
Yeah, that was. I remember seeing the film, and his opponent was raising his arms up like, "Hey, what's going on?" You know. It's, yeah, I've only seen that in all the years I've been involved in this. I only seen something like that happen once, and it was. On one of the tough man cards I was fighting in, this guy got hit so hard he just, in the first 20 seconds, he took about four or five punches, turned around, and just took off running. I'd never seen anything like it. The crowd was hysterical. Great stuff.
Great stuff.
Let's see what else we got. I know we've been doing this loser of the week thing. I got something that's kind of along those lines. No, this guy's not really that much of a loser, but. He wasn't arrested or anything, but he's a big loser in the fact that this killed him, this whole situation. But this is a boxer, Albuquerque's Derek Casillas, a light heavyweight who trained at Albuquerque's Johnny Tapia Boxing Academy. He died on last Saturday, 28 years old, struck by a pickup truck and killed. Now get this is why he was killed. He was trying to cross I-25 after fleeing the scene of an accident. He had an 0-1 record as a professional boxer. So I guess that's a lesson to anybody who would leave the scene of an accident. Number one, don't cross the highway. And number two, fess up. Accept your bad deeds.
Accept the consequences.
I talked a little bit earlier about Ben Rothwell, who was just suspended for testosterone levels being elevated. This is an interesting one because the UFC handed down the 9-month suspension here, not the Athletic Commission. That's gave him the right to do the TRT use. So it's kind of an interesting deal here. And he was... basically, I think he won the fight, and he called out Travis Brown afterwards. And Travis Brown's there to fight Josh Barnett, but I don't see anything where it says the levels were astronomical. But the one thing that came out about this after the facts is he's explaining why he got the exception. He said I had applied for TRT after an endocrinologist. Wisconsin athletic doctors diagnosed me with hypogonadism. And the kicker, they felt it was caused by a car crash in 1999 that left me with severe head trauma and in a coma. Doctors told me TRT was something that could stop the hypogonadism from degrading my body. And that statement from Rothwell actually was mentioned in a piece today on FightOpinion.com. Like one of the top stories there today underneath the UFC results. And it's basically he's trying to make the argument that, you know, why is this guy even fighting? He had such an intense brain injury. You know, how is he allowed to fight? And where are the policing authorities here to come in and do these brain scans and stuff to prevent guys like this from fighting? They've already had this type of injury. You know? So just give the guy TRT. You know, you better take a better look at his brain before you send him in there. So I don't know if anything is going to come of that, but basically the article there on Fight Opinion is saying that you know, the UFC and the MMA in general better watch out for some of the things that are handicapping the NFL now with these lawsuits about concussions and that sort of thing. So if you got some time, go over there to fightopinion.com, check that out. It's definitely worth a read. We got another story from Sacramento, California. Governor Jerry Brown over there in California has signed legislation authorizing the State Athletic Commission to regulate youth competitions in the martial art of pancration. And it's basically, if you don't know what that is, it combines the skills from karate and jiu-jitsu. So, and it's actually, I think, dates back to the Olympics. I think they used to do it in the Olympics, or was a Greek thing back in the day when it first started. But the commission also already oversees full contact boxing, kickboxing, and mixed martial arts for adults. And they could set a minimum age for competitors or require a doctor on site during tournaments to make it perfectly safe for everybody. So, let's see what else we got here. I think we got a couple more. Oh, here's a good one. Cole Miller. Have you heard about any of this Cole Miller coming out, Tom?
No, this must be something pretty new.
Well, apparently he competed in the Octagon 14 times already, but he's pretty pissed off because there's a lack of sponsorship money available for guys like him. And obviously, we've talked plenty about fighter pay and all that, but we haven't really heard a lot of gripes about sponsorships. Usually, lately at least, it's been, you know, complaining about, well, we can't make enough per fight to pay our trainers and everything. Well, Cole Miller says he can't find a good, decent sponsor. He's fighting Andy Ogle on the UFC Fight Night 30 next. And he says, quote, "It seems like everything has dried up. The companies only want to commit to a smaller roster for their company. There are these companies that just straight up won't call back after they hear that I'm on Facebook." So basically saying that, you know, if you're not a main card fighter, it's almost impossible to get a good sponsorship. Back in the day when he was on other UFC undercards, which weren't even televised at all at the time, get around $4,000 to $5,000 in sponsorship money per fight, and he said the most he ever made in 2010 was $23,500 for one fight. But now he says he's lucky to get $3,500 for his fight against Cole. And one of the reasons for this, the Fertitas and the Dana White and the management here at the UFC has set up this gatekeeper fee, basically. Where I think it's like $50,000 minimum for these sponsors to get on board, and just to be able to have the permission to sponsor the fighter. That doesn't even include their paying or her. Women are involved. But, you know, Miller's not a superstar. I think he lost 3 out of his last 4 fights, so that's probably why he's fighting on Facebook. But it's just very, very surprising that there's so little compensation. Apparently, you know, the author of this article at least is making the argument that it's the UFC's fault for driving this money away. I don't know. You know, it probably was also a factor that in MMA isn't really the fastest growing sport in the world as much as they try to keep saying it is. It's not really anymore. It might have been a few years ago, but I don't think it is now.
Right.
And right. So the people that are there have been there usually, and they're not attracting as many companies as they used to be. It seemed like 2 or 3 years ago, there was a new there was a new, you know, sponsorship type company or fight gear or whatever. There's a new company every day popping up on the social networks trying to get your attention. And nowadays, it seems like, you know, those companies that really had a solid plan and a marketing aspect, they're the ones that stuck around, and all the other ones faded away. I've had a couple sponsors who just didn't have it because they didn't have the name right, they didn't have the industry set up properly. They just couldn't make it, so maybe that has a lot to do with it. Another quick story here before we go. Well, a couple quick stories, MMA stories. Maybe we'll go into overtime here. Ryan Couture has talked about his release from the UFC. He says, I don't regret the approach we took. I still don't feel a need to be on anyone's shit list. Besides, with Dan's schedule and how often he has to be out of town, even the country, there's no guarantee he would have been able to make my fights anyway, so it might have been a fight for no reason. Explaining how he got the call and the cut, he says, my manager got a call from Joe Silva, told him that they liked me and the way I did things, but that they have a lot of guys right now and they just don't have anything for me right now, and that I should go build myself back up with some more wins. He also said, that's what I expected after losing two fights in a row. And additionally, he said, I'm disappointed in myself for not performing as well as I could have. I know I could do better. They're not telling him that he's banned because of the father thing, and they're not making it personal, it seems, but they're at least telling him that he has a chance to come back, which is more than a lot of fighters get, so it is what it is, but I don't think he's too bad in shape, but I'm sure he'll find a new home somewhere. And when I interviewed him out in Vegas, he said he really didn't want to work for the UFC anyway, so we'll see. Quentin Rampage Jackson, back in the news. Former trainer of his says he defamed him by calling him a crook in a video interview. This is John Ibarra. He sued Jackson in Superior Court out in California for defamation, invasion of privacy, and infliction of emotional distress. And this was all stemming from an October 2012 interview on the MMA website MMAfighting.com, in which Jackson allegedly accused Ibarra of fleecing fighters out of their earnings. The fighter's statements concerned a separate defamation case Ibarra filed in the same court 4 years ago. In the interview, Jackson calls Ibarra a liar and a fucking crook and accuses the trainer of stealing from him at the training camp, And Jackson, Ibarra also says Jackson implied that Ibarra had stolen from him and other fighters, and that the trainer was, quote, the reason Jackson was arrested for drunk driving and Jackson's involuntary confinement in a psychiatric ward, unquote. Ibarra also claims that all these accusations are false, says that other fighters retracted similar statements. Jackson cited no concrete evidence in support of his claims. And to bolster the lawsuit, Ibarra cites the testimony of Jackson's financial advisor, Neil Jaramillo, who allegedly denied that Ibarra had taken advantage of the fighter. But Jackson has refused to retract the statements, and the trainer is seeking unspecified damages and costs. Of course, Jackson is no stranger to getting in trouble with the law. He was charged with assault after a brawl with a teammate on his community college wrestling team. And in 2008, we all might remember when he was arrested after driving a pickup into three vehicles and leading police on a high-speed chase. And it doesn't mention here in the article, but if you really remember that case, there was a woman who was pregnant in one of those vehicles who lost the baby. So he was very lucky he didn't do any jail time over that one, because I think she refused to press any charges over that, but I'm sure a lot of money had to be thrown around. And he was driving a pretty big vehicle during that rampage, and he publicly blamed that on staying up too late and drinking energy drinks for 3 days or whatever. So But Ibarra was Jackson's trainer and manager from 2005 to 2009, and is represented by Samuel Smith out there, Beverly Hills, California. Good luck on that. I don't know how far you're going to get against a guy like that, but typically in those situations, most of those statements
are going to be labeled opinion, his opinion of the guy, and not necessarily stating a fact. So I think this training is going to be shit out of luck by the end of the process. At least from my own personal experience, I would say that. And probably Jackson's going to be able to afford a better lawyer and be able to spend more money over the course of the whole thing. So it is what it is. Anyway, we've pretty much run out of time here, and we're in overtime now, so...
Can we throw one question at Tom before we get off the air?
Shoot.
Okay. Before we get over here tonight, we were talking about the fight this weekend, Marquez and Bianca. And what I came out and said was, usually I put all the info in my brain and I compute out a result. This fight has been giving me a couple of different scenarios. One, I mean, Bradley looked pretty beat up, especially when the last fight was Provednikov. But the other intangible could be Marquez finally got the hurdle. He finally beat Pacquiao. It's been 11 months almost. Could he be suffering a letdown? The man's 40 years old. So, I mean, I could make an argument for Bradley. I can make an argument for Marquez. Part of me wants to keep saying Marquez is the superior fighter. Bradley's the younger fighter. But the one scenario I keep coming to, and I told this to Rich, Bradley reminds me a lot of Evander Holyfield later in his career where there's a lot of headbutts. You know, especially with the bald head, reminds me of it a lot, too. And I can see his head playing a major role in this fight, opening scar tissue over Marquez's eyes. And I can see the fight ending either in like a technical draw or go into a technical decision where it goes maybe 7 or 8 rounds and then it stops it and then they go to the scorecards. If you put me out on the limb, I'm going to say the superior fighter, even though he's smaller and older, will win this fight. But I just have a funny feeling that heads are going to cause an early stoppage.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because Holyfield really became a master at that. And I'm kind of looking forward to hearing John Ruiz's comments on that next week. Yeah, Holyfield really had that down. He had that down to his sides, you know, like his third arm in there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, good, very good point.
Yeah, Tom, I don't think you heard it, but at the beginning of the show, I told Tony we might actually have a bigger show next week than we could have imagined because we're going to have 2 big heavyweights on. Yeah, if we get the second one to pull through here and commit, we could have Shannon Briggs.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is all. I've been looking forward to it.
He's been in the movies, too, and he's also, Travis there, talking about the comeback and wanting to fight the Klitschko's. Best of the best, of course. And this is a guy who has asthma, too. So that's a whole other side of the story that's pretty intriguing and interesting. So we're going to have an epic show next week, and I'm not going to have much time for anything else but interviews if we got 2 of those guys on the show. But who knows? See what happens. I'm sure it will be an interesting conversation all around.
You bet.
All right, that's all I've got. Until next week, I think that's it for us.
All right, guys. And as always, let's enjoy the fights.
Guys, have a great weekend. Until next week, hasta la vista, baby.
Go Eagles.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. See you guys later.
Adios.